Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You listen to myself, Albert, and it's another special week. Barney's still away, but we've got an absolutely fantastic guest. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by Felipe Melo. Felipe, how are you doing, mate? Thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you.
No, thank me for the invite. It's really cool to be here to speak with you. And let's crack on.
Yeah, it's something we wanted to do for a long time. We should give a big shout out to Aaron Barton as well. Aaron was supposed to join us as well. Unfortunately, he couldn't for work commitments, but we were going to do a full Próxima Jornada Times Long Ball Football collaboration. Hopefully, we'll still do that in the future. But no, it's great to have you on from the Próxima Jornada podcast. I'm sure all our listeners follow the Próxima Jornada page and listen to the show while it was running. So it's a pleasure to have you on. And also, I know from our sort of interactions on Twitter that we have a lot of similar taste, shall we say, in some of the managers and the players. So I feel like this is a good fit for the Long Football Podcast. So yes, once again, thank you very much. And if you're interested in following Felipe, then I'll put all his links in the description of this podcast, so you can give him a follow on Twitter. He's an excellent commentator on Portuguese football. So I highly recommend doing that. There's a lot to get through today. I should start this by with a small apology that we are recording this on Monday evening, which means we won't be able to cover Benfica's game against Boavista. But since we didn't do a podcast last week and there have been big changes at Benfica, I think it's still a good opportunity to talk about the managerial change at Benfica, as they have now appointed their new manager as Bruno Lage returns to the club for a second spell as a manager of the men's senior team. It's been a positive start for Bruno Lage. Only two games in charge, but he won both. One in the league, beating Santa Clara 4-1 at Estádio da Luz, and another one in the Champions League away at Severna Cervejda 2-1 away from home. On the last podcast, Felipe, we discussed who they might bring in. And while we weren't exactly sure, Bruno Lage was, of course, one of the names. One thing that we all agreed on was that it did seem pretty clear that what Benfica wanted was a manager who was, how can we put it, happy to work within the parameters set out by the board upstairs and the sporting director and the president and all that kind of stuff. Perhaps someone who would be happy to work with players that they're given and all that kind of stuff. It does, to me, feel like Bruno Lage fits that bill. Of course, in my opinion, still a very, very capable coach in terms of his footballing ability. But, you know, perhaps, well, I'll get your opinion, first of all, just on the appointment of Bruno Lage, whether you think it was what you expected, whether it was exactly the appointment that you would have made, and whether you think he has a better chance of being successful than perhaps Roger Schmidt has been over the last season or so.
I think, to be honest with you, the problem was that this was not in the plan. I think Rui Costa never thought this would happen four games in the season. Because I think that was the first mistake, allowing Schmidt to start the third season in command, because it's obviously not working last year. Very rarely these things turn around to back to the good side. And then I think when they decided to sack him, there was no better option in the table, because looking at the managers, they were free on the market. There's not many people around. So they appointed someone they obviously requested to work with before, knows the club. It was kind of an easy fit in terms of obviously what the fans expected from him as well. We just don't know if he's going to be the Lage from the first season when he recovers seven points, or the Lage from the second season where he lost 7 points. So he's just going to find out. But I think, to be fair, he's a good appointment overall. It's from until the end of the season, then they will see what's going to happen. I think it's more important for Rui Costa that Lage works than the other way around.
Yes.
So that will be interesting to see the outcome. And to be fair, to make it better than what he was before is not very hard. I think you can see, even from the first game against Santa Clara, very to the stands to see, look how I'm so much more different. I'm much more engaged with the players. These people follow me. So it was a big uplift. You could see the reaction even when they go 1-0 down against Santa Clara, that all the stadium was 100% behind them. If it was with Schmidt, that would definitely not be the case. And then the biggest change was taking Florentin when Barreiro playing together. That didn't make no sense, having two players so similar in the center of the park, and then change it with that three players with Florentin Holsteiner and Kökçü works so much better. And it kind of was obvious. So I think everyone could see that they needed to do something there. Looking around, I think it was just not overcomplicated. I think Schmidt got to a point where he was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Doesn't matter. Nothing else will matter. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go this way. And I think neither the players were very engaged with him. The fans were obviously not engaged with him. So I think it was kind of an obvious change they had to do. And Lage not being the best, I think obviously they would prefer Abel. But Abel is not available until the end of next year. Mourinho, they missed out on a couple of months. So Lage will have to be.
Yeah, and I think the early positive signs for Marie Fallage are he's inherited a bit of a mess, basically. I think that's fair to say, especially for me with the squad. And I think the positive early signs are that he does seem to be very flexible with who he brings in. You know, he obviously started with Pavlidis up front, but he was using Arthur Cabral, and he's been using the full squad. He's been using all these players. And I think there was an interview where he was asked about Besh, the fullback, about whether he was a player that was in his plans, and his response was very much, you know, there's no such thing as Roger Schmidt's players and other players. It's just they're all Benfica players. So I think from that point of view, definitely it's good for the club that they have someone who's flexible, willing to work with what he's given. And like I said, I still go back to the fact that I still think Bruno Lage is a very, very capable coach, and I don't think there's any reason why. And, you know, to speak honestly, within the context of the Premier League, why he can't be successful with a team with the amount of quality players that that he has at his disposal. So we'll see how it progresses over the coming weeks and months. You outlined a few of them briefly. I'm just interested, before we move on, what do you think are the biggest things that Bruno Lage has to do differently, or what does he have to change specifically in order to get Benfica back on track compared to what was happening under Roger Schmidt?
I think is obviously not counting with I forgot his name, the Turkish player that I cannot pronounce it actually.
Either Kökçü or the winger, who also winger. I can't pronounce. But yeah.
So without counting him, because obviously he came after Schmidt was gone, mm-hmm. so he's hard to, obviously it was not in Schmidt's plans before. But I think essentially you need to find a position for Kökçü that works, which mm-hmm. I think Lage is doing. So in kind of the three midfield players, is the one that even with the ball becomes very important, because he kind of drops to almost the same line as the centre backs to start play. And that's very different from what Schmidt was doing, where sometimes he was playing down the left hand side to cut inside and make no much sense. I think mm-hmm. he loses a lot about how can he be important. And then trying to find a way that Di Maria works defensively. Not in terms of him tracking back, because that's a waste of talent, because he's too old to track back and then have enough energy to going forward. It's just to find a way, how can we defend that space without using Di Maria? And I think Holzheisner on that kind of center mid right hand side can find that gap well. So him and the fullback Kuchipau, or obviously Bai is now injured, but whatever the right back will be, they can defend that space well, and that protects Di Maria. And I think those are the two main things, because everything else, if the midfield works and you have a player like Di Maria suiting your team, then you'll do well in the Portuguese league. It's not so hard. And then Pavlidis, I think, is just a matter of time. He's a good striker. He scores goals in the Everdeese. I think eventually starts scoring in Portugal as well. But I think it'll be more of a consequence of how the team plays than trying to see how can they score more goals with him. So I think Kökçü and Di Maria will be the two main things. And then everything around them will just fit into place.
I completely agree. I mean, I know, not a lot, but a little bit has been made of Pavlidis' lack of goals, perhaps. But I think every time I've watched him play, I just think that the service that he's receiving is pretty minimal. So, I completely agree. Only a matter of time if they start getting people in their right positions and getting the right people the ball. But look, let's move on. Let's talk about some actual football from this week, and start, as we always do, at the top of the table, where Sporting continued their formidable form by beating AVS 3-0 at home. 2 goals from Victor Gyökeres. That takes his tally up to 10 goals in 6 league games. It's a fantastic start to the season for the Swedish striker. And of course, a first Sporting goal for the new signing, Konrad Harder. That gave Sporting a 3-goal win. It was another supremely dominant performance by Sporting. They stand alone at the top of the table, not just in terms of points, but for me also in terms of the level of performance that they're producing, which I don't think is being matched by anybody else in the league. There were some changes in this game forced by injury. Conrad Harder obviously started ahead of Patrick Rosales, Mateus Reese fielded at centre back. We had Franco Israel starting in goal, but none of that set them back. It was another excellent performance. Based on what we're seeing right now, in your opinion, how far do you think the Sporting team can go? Because the early signs are extremely positive so far this season.
Yes, to be honest, it's hard to see many problems with Sporting when you look around at the squad. The only thing that I can see that might create some issues in the long run throughout the season is, in my view, the lack of centre mids. So they have Morita, which Ruben Amorim mentioned, obviously with all the travels, is not at the same level as he was before the international break, and that's why I didn't even play or didn't start the last game. Daniel Bragança is the second option. Obviously, a bit of a knot after the game. You have Yulman, which I think, obviously, playing all the time gets him quite tired. And the second half against Avs was not so good because of the tiredness. And I think they missed that fourth player. And I think in the long run, with so many leagues, in the Champions League and the Cups, that might be an issue. Apart from it, I think, it's just so... They play so well. It's so hard to find any gaps on how can a team really damages them. And that's obviously down to having the same manager for 4 years and a half. Most of the team or the bones of the team are still there for quite a long time now. And it's quite fun to watch. I think obviously everyone looks at Gyökeres as a freak of nature, but I don't think it's only him. I think even without a different striker, as long as they make that some sort of same movements, the team would still play really well. And yeah, it's really, really fun to watch them. I think in the Portuguese league, unless Benfica really gets into gear, I don't think no team will be quite close from them. And in Europe, who knows? I think the playoffs of the Champions League are very possible. And then after that, it's kind of a luck to see who they play, because they'll be playing very well. And then if they get them, well, not in the playoffs, probably not Man City, but if they get a strong team, it will be hard anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's only the centre mids. I think they should have brought a fourth one.
Yeah, the central midfield is interesting. It is, for me, the one weak area of squad planning, I think, over the summer, especially when you consider they let Mateus Fernandes leave and Dariusuga and, well, I know he wasn't really playing, but Coindredi, who also left on loan. So that's three. I mean, I admittedly, young players, so perhaps not players that they would have counted on. But, you know, Asuga is a player that I understand they have great belief in. You know, he's certainly played a lot of minutes for the youth team, and Coindredi, a player that they made an investment in, albeit not a huge investment, but they, you know, went out to sign him from Estoril. These are players that perhaps you might have thought could have been in and around the squad to help make up the numbers. Alas, it hasn't happened, and you know, maybe over the course of the season that could be something that will come back to bite them. But it does kind of at this point just feel like, in many ways, we're almost clutching at straws, trying to come up with a reason why they might not succeed. Because it, you know, it is really getting to the point. Only after six games, where we, you know, we speak about them so much every week, and it's just relentlessly positive. Because you know, they do have, let's face it, such a strong squad, especially in the starting 11, where there's a number of players, a large number of players, especially like I say, not just Gyökeres, but now we're seeing the best on Francisco Trincão, and you know, we're seeing the best in Pedro Gonçalves, and even defensive replay. Players like Diomande and Inacio and Hillman, all these players are playing at a really high level. So it really is a credit to them that they've been able to build such a formidable squad. I'm looking ahead at the calendar. I'm just looking ahead to that game against Manchester City in the Champions League now as the next test, because you know, they passed the first test in the league by being Porto. And you know, the next when I had a brief look at the schedule, I thought that Manchester City game was pretty much the next time they're going to play a team that you can argue is better than them. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they do in that game, and see how they're tested when they come up against a bigger side.
Yeah, and actually mentioned something that I find very interesting, which is I think a lot of people analyzing Sporting focus, because he's a freak of nature, and Gyökeres and Trincão and Pot, and how those three work so well together. But in my view, where Sporting improved the most was actually in defense. Mm. And I've mentioned before the start of the season when Coates left, there a lot of Sporting fans were like freaking out. He's the leader. It's going to be so mm-hmm. hard without him, which in my view was only a good thing they left because that allowed to have Diomande in the middle, which I think is the best place of the three. Definitely. The best. Everyone knew he was going to be really good. Obviously, he had a bad moment against Porto, and Portuguese fans are very quick on judging a player. So everyone was doubting on him straight away. And I think on Inacio on the left, he knows obviously Amorim really, really well and how to play. But those three allowed the defense to play so much high on the pitch. So normally, if you think even when Sporting won the league the first season with Amorim and then even the second season where they done quite well, it was with, okay, without the ball, we're just going to drop and mm-hmm. see the play in front of us. And then we win the ball in those moments. And now Sporting just against Avs on the weekend, they try to press very, very high on the pitch because they know even if the ball gets in behind, they have Diomande on yesterday, Mateus Reis, but they're all very, very quick on recovery runs. So they are allowed to play much higher, which allows Yeomans and Morito, Daniel Braganza to be closer from the center mid. So sometimes they're almost in the same line as Gyökeres if the center mid of the opposite team tries to drop. And I think that was where Sporting improved the most. And then yeah, Prunt, they just have obviously very good chemistry, all those three players. But defensively, I think is where they improved the most.
Yeah, and I think the squad depth is a huge asset to them. I mean, you know, the back three that they went with in this game, Mateus Reis, Diomande and De Bast, they have a whole other back three that can come in with the likes of Saint-Just and Inacio and Quaresma as well, and even either of those three options of those two sets of three would be a real asset to any team at any level in this league. So really great squad depth, and the one, you know, position that we talked about actually quite a lot on the last podcast was the with the wing backs as well, and to see Nuno Santos coming back in, you know, this is a guy who's not played a lot this season, and yet you look at him in that position and you have to say there's nobody better than him in the league playing that position. And he's a player who's been so useful to Ruben Amorim ever since he joined, and so instrumental in both their title winning seasons. And this is a guy he's not really even played much this season. So yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think it's absolutely right to highlight central midfield. And again, it could be an issue over the course of a long season with multiple competitions to play in. If they were to get maybe even one or two injuries in that position, that could come back to bite them. But almost everywhere else on the pitch, they seem to have really good squad depth and really good options on the bench as well. So more positive discussion about Sporting, which is all we ever seem to do these days. I'm waiting for them to... I'm joking, of course. I'm not waiting for them to slip up. But at the moment, it's quite hard to find new angles to talk about Sporting at the moment. It's all going very swimmingly. I will ask you briefly about Avs, because they're a fairly interesting team to look at. Technically, their first time in the Primeira Liga, if you count this ABS entity as a new club, which for legal reasons we must do. They do have a couple of wins under their belt. They've had some okay performances. They've got, in my opinion, a competent manager, Vitor Campelos. There are players in that squad with Primeira Liga experience. From what I've seen of them so far this season, how can I put it? I don't think they're necessarily going to trouble the upper echelons of the table. But I do think they've probably got a very decent chance of surviving in the Premier League this season, which is no mean feat, of course, you know, for any newly promoted club. What's been your assessment of them from the few games that we've seen?
I think they'll be fine. I don't think they'll struggle whatsoever. I think they have enough quality between the manager and some of the players in essential positions to be okay. Osho is such a great signing because he's gonna come in. And you could see against who they play last weekend where they won, and he saves them in the last minute. Is it Riwav? I can't remember, excuse me. But he has a couple of saves at the end of the game to give them the 3 points. Even yesterday, he makes some like crazy saves that you think, like, you are almost 40. You should not be it's allowed incredible. To jump that high. So great, great finding. And then they have, obviously, they have Nenelch now. He's injured, but he's still a striker with 41. That gives you so much quality. They went to pick up Rodrigo Ribeiro from Sporting on loan, which I think is a great signing as well. They recover one of the most talented players in that squad, which was Vasco Lopes. Last year, he didn't play much because he had a quite serious injury. But now he's back, and you saw him play the last 45 minutes against Sporting and how much calm he's on the ball, and will be definitely one of the best players for them this season. So I don't think they'll have any issues. I have an issue how they played yesterday, in sense of it was a team that everyone obviously goes to plays with Sporting nowadays and you feel they're probably going to lose. But the first half, I think it was very poor because it's just a team that, okay, we're not going to play with the ball. We're just going to drop back and just try to survive as much as we can. And it lasted 15 minutes, which I think it needs to be kind of a balance. Cannot just be kicking the ball long and then trying to set back and don't leave many gaps. But across the other games, I think they were playing well and it's fine. They have 2 wins, 6 points. So I don't think there'll be any issues.
I mean, I think the signing of Oshoa is one of the most exciting or strange transfers we've had in Portugal for a very, very long time. I think that was very exciting. It was quite interesting to hear him talk about why he chose to come to Portugal. I think for him it was just exciting, the idea of playing in Europe and playing in a new country. And I mean, Hampshire is an incredibly random choice of club. I would love to know the story of how he ended up there, what agent he knows that that brought him to the club or whatever it was. But you're right, because he has actually made a real, real impact on the pitch, a genuine impact. He's certainly not just there to sell shirts, but I'm not sure how many goalkeeper shirts ABS are selling.
From the Mexican community in Portugal, I'm sure they'll
sell a few. They'll do a lot of online sales to Mexico. But no, I agree. I mean, as with all the new promoted clubs, it's I always find them interesting to watch, and there's always one that seems to kind of shine a bit brighter than the others. I think we'll come on to which club that is this year shortly, but I don't think that's going to be Avs, but I'm sure they'll happily take survival at this stage and building from there. Well, let's talk about another game. There was one very highly anticipated game this week, which was, of course, Porto travelling to League High Flyers Vitória. I think a lot of neutrals were hoping for quite a hotly contested game. I think Vitória obviously played very well so far this season, and Porto also in very good form. The reality, though, was that it was a lot more kind of one-sided than perhaps we expected. Porto won 3-0 and earned a very, very valuable 3 points. I think the story of this game really is that this is the game where new Porto striker Samu Omorodion announced himself really to not just Porto fans, but to the league in general with a very strong performance, 2 very well-taken goals. Porto played very well this season, I think, and they've obviously won a lot of games. But I think it is fair to say that one weakness they did have was probably in the striker position. And I know Dani Nomaso was getting a lot of opportunities up front. If you're being honest, I don't think he quite convinced that he would be the man to lead the line for Porto this season. A lot of their goals were coming from the wingers and from midfield. But it does look like Samu could be perhaps a missing piece of the puzzle. Definitely, he looks to have a lot of natural attributes that really suit that kind of striker to lead the line on his own. The number nine, great physicality, a lot of strength, quite a raw player. Obviously, very, very young, only 20 years of age, but some very positive early signs with those 2 goals. Makes it 3 for the season as well, I think.
Yeah, so actually, before going into Samu's a bit more detail, he has quite a fun stat at the moment, which is he has 3 shots on target, 3 goals. is him. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Wow. Okay. There's 3 more players that have at least 2 goals, but had shots on target by number of goals. So 100% efficient rate. Wow. I'm going to give you a clue. They all scored this round of games, this match day.
So the one that came into my head first, Clayton?
No, damn it.
I thought that was going to be the one. All right, well, now I'm struggling. who else scored this weekend with 2 goals? I'm lost. You have to let us know.
So you have, with 2 goals and 2 shots on target, 2 goals, you have another striker, which is El Ozani from Braga, which scored the third goal.
Very interesting. Okay.
Now. which is quite fun. The third one is, I think, what you're referring to, the team, the surprise team coming up from the Segunda Liga, which is Vinicius. Three shots on target, three goals. And the other one of my favorite players in Portugal, not a striker, centre mid from Gil Vicente, Fujimoto. He had after he's won the goal on the weekend. He has three shots on target, three goals, which is amazing.
Fantastic.
going back to Samu, actually, I've quite an unpopular opinion, but when Porto signed him, I text Aaron and I told him that I was not very convinced. it's not aging very well, but I was like, I don't think this will be the player that Porto needs it. But yeah, so far, well, it's hard to say anything bad. I think his natural instinct is quite good. His movement is very, very good. Mm-hmm. I think my only concerns was obviously coming from Alavés, where he played last season, which is a team obviously playing much more in the counter. So we needed a lot of space to run. So exactly like the second goal he scored against Guimarães, which is ball in the back and using that pace and strength to get ahead. Because I think his first touch, it's not very good. I don't think his positioning in terms of with the ball is very good. So if you think about the second goal against Guimarães, he has the good things and the things that I'm worried about, which is the movement and getting in behind and the pace to get to the ball. But a natural striker would shot that with the left across goal. And what he tries to do, because obviously he doesn't have a left foot or he doesn't trust his left foot, he opens up his body quite a lot to then hit it with the right and go around the keeper. Because he had enough space, he was fine. But that's not going to happen that often. The defender should actually be closer from him. And that extra second would take him angle. So I think you could see the good things about him and how can he be such a good player, and the things that he makes me not 100% convinced in him just yet. But well, if he becomes really good, then this is terrible. If he struggles, then I'm a visionary. So who knows?
Well, do you know what it is? You mentioned that second goal. If anybody's not seen it, it is quite... it's almost quite humorous to go back and watch the highlights of the goal, because as you say, he opens up his body to shoot with the right foot. The problem is he has to take about five or six more steps. So he kind of is running sideways for a short amount of time, and he's completely broadcasting exactly where he's going to shoot the ball. Yeah. In that sense, I did wonder whether Bruno Varela could have made a better attempt at the save, because it was so obvious where he was going to try and place the ball. But the ball went in the back of the net. And you know, I think it goes back to what I was saying. He's very raw. You know, he has a lot of natural qualities that I think are desirable in a striker. And certainly he seems to, even at this young age, to know how to use those to his advantage. But I mean, and this is probably a very, very unfair comparison, but if you compare him with, I mean, it's ridiculous, but if you were to compare him to Victor Gyökeres, in a sense that Victor Gyökeres is also... has some of those physical qualities in terms of the strength and the physicality and the presence, but Victor Gyökeres also has the technique and the confidence to receive the ball in a similar position to Samu and run past the defender and has the composure to shoot, whereas Samu kind of uses his strength to hold off the defender, but it's a bit more laborious, and you know he probably won't be able to get as many goals playing in that way. But you know, a very young player, and clearly a player that Porto have invested a lot in and have high hopes for, with the price that they paid for him. So from a neutral perspective, wishing him all the best and all success. I do have a soft spot for a striker like that. You know, that kind of likes to bully defenders. It's kind of feels a bit old school. I like it. He wasn't the only new Porto signing who made an impact in this game, though. Perhaps one that was slightly overlooked was Francisco Moura at left back. He joined from Famalicão on deadline day. Obviously, we've all seen what he could do at Famalicão. I think he was quite a highly rated player there. So it was very pleasing to see him really step up and contribute as well. And I think left back is, I think, fair to say, a position that Porto have struggled with for quite a few seasons. Probably since Alex Teller's left, they've struggled to find the left back who, obviously, you know, doesn't even necessarily have to be on the same level as Alex Teller's, but someone who can just deliver consistently. I don't think they've quite had that, but Moura looks really excellent. And for me, it was very pleasing to see him playing well, considering that he's come from, you know, a smaller club in the league. And this is a big opportunity for him, but I think he really added a lot to Porto in this game.
Yeah, it's, for me, it was the best play in the pitch, because first of all, it's hard to understand how a few seasons ago Braga left him go. It doesn't make any sense, especially looking up now who they have as a left back. He done really well at Famalicão. And then against Guimarães, he showed something that I wasn't so aware that he was capable of, which is, so because obviously him, I thought when he went to Porto, him and Galeno would clash a bit because Galeno obviously likes to be on the left-hand side to have space to go on 1v1s. Francisco Moura actually was so good on going up the field with Famalicão and using that space so well. So I thought maybe they were going to clash in the same movements in Porto. But actually what Vitor Bruno is trying to do is actually have Francisco Moura more inside as a start playoff, almost in the same line as the centre-backs, and Galeno staying out wide. And then going, as soon as the ball moves to the first stage or if Starkey drops, then actually Francisco Moura keeps the run inside, and that's how he got the cross for the third goal, while Galeno stays completely out wide. And kind of that movement is quite clever for centre-backs, like for what Thiago Dalot does for Portugal and Man United, for instance. And to be fair, there's something new in his game that I was not aware that he was able to fit so well in that way of play. So very, very impressive, because technically so good. Obviously, he's very strong on 1v1s with the ball and without the ball. He was not very under pressure against Guimarães. I think Guimarães in the first half were quite in low block. I think they feared Porto too much. And then in the second half, when they tried to get a bit more high and press a bit more high and try to have a bit more of the ball, they conceded very, very quickly. And then kind of the game went off rails, and then Porto have always the control, really. But yeah, Francisco Moura, best for me from all the signings, and already said what I think about Samu, but from all the signings, I think he was the best signing, because to be honest with you, I can see him in the next World Cup being in the Portuguese squad, because I think he's that good.
Fantastic, yeah, very exciting, and it was an interesting window for Porto as well. Obviously, so much change, not least with André Villas-Boas coming in and the new manager, goes without saying. But you know, it took them a while to get going in the transfer market, but by the end of the window, they had brought in quite a number of players and a lot of good reinforcements. You know, I think we both agree that it's going to be very difficult for anybody to challenge Sporting this season. But I do look at Porto and I think they do seem to have managed so far this transition period remarkably well, because, you know, with so much change, there's so much that could go wrong with the new manager and the new ideas and the new not ownership, but the new leadership upstairs and the new players. But looking at Porto, I think they do deserve a lot of credit for how they've navigated this tricky period. Obviously, they're not in the Champions League this season. They're playing Europa League football, which might make things a little bit easier in terms of the less high stakes in that sense. But personally, I look at what they've done this summer and I think it does deserve quite a lot of credit, because it takes a long time to rebuild a club, especially when there's been one quite talismanic leader for quite a while, and when that leader leaves, it can be difficult to get back on track. But I think they've done a commendable job so far.
Yeah, 100%. What the only question is, what's going to happen in January? I think a lot of their last minute deals, like with Moura, with Noé Pérez, was counting that Galeno would go, and obviously we all know what happened—a bit of a mess. But I think they're already counting, kind of, okay, we're going to have this 50 million coming in, so we can spend a bit of this money in getting some crucial players. And obviously that deal fell through. So I think in terms of net, I don't think they actually made that much money over the summer. So we'll see how they're going to defend in the January market. But yeah, if they keep these squads and everyone is fit, I think they're still a bit off Sporting, but they will fight for obviously for the Champions League next season. And I think they have everything to be a good season in Europe, especially with no clubs falling from the Champions League to Europa League. There's no reason why they could not go quite far.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we should talk about Vitória as well. Naturally, a disappointing result. Nobody wants to lose any game. And while I think a lot of people might say, "Oh, well, you know, losing to Porto is not that big a deal," I do think that they would have hoped to have had a much bigger impact on the game than they did. You know, it's been a very positive start to the season. Perhaps they would have seen this game as an opportunity to kind of show people how far they've come and that they're capable of really making an impact against a big club. They did fall short of that, in my opinion. Obviously, it was a 3-0 loss and a disappointing performance in that sense. But in the kind of short but very intense period that Rui Borges has been in charge, there has been a lot of success, and it does seem like they're on the right track. And I always welcome success for a team like Vitória, because it's very important to have the Portuguese league as competitive as possible. And I know a lot of people would like to see Vitória kind of fighting for the top four spaces to keep things exciting and to keep those other clubs on their toes. I don't know whether you think that's possible this season, but certainly from the beginning of season, I think Rui Borges can take a lot of credit for what they've achieved so far. It has been, I think it has been quite an intense packed start to the season with the Europa Conference League qualification, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so first of all, Rui Borges obviously showed a few years ago in Académica, well, they almost got him promoted to Primeira Liga. Now I know now they're in Liga 3, but a few years ago when Borges was there, they were very, very close to promotion. And then obviously last season with Moreirense, where he done an amazing job. And he deserved to get the job at Guimarães. I think the start of the season was obviously very good. First time getting into the Conference League stage. But I think it's kind of a reality check because. And this is kind of a more broad discussion than just Guimarães, but I think the average level of the middle teams in Portugal this season in comparison to last year dropped. I think a lot of teams are worse than what they were last year. So I think that's why teams like Guimarães, Braga, can do quite well against those teams and build up confidence. And then when they face support, or Benfica or Sporting, can feel like kind of still a big gap because. They go into this game with both 12 points, both teams feeling very positive. Guimarães just came from beat Braga at Braga, but then they feel there was still such a quite big step from Guimarães to Porto because yeah, I think that middle level is dropping. So I think they'll fight with Braga for the fourth place. I think they'll be easily getting in fifth. But I would really like if a team like Guimarães would just go, okay. I think we're not going to make top three or not going to make top four. Let's give a good run in the Conference League because, first of all, it'll be good for Portugal in terms of points. And because I actually think the future for Guimarães needs to be with the money coming from Europe. So it'll be quite fun if they were able to get far.
Well, it'd be fantastic. And I can't wait for the Conference League group stage to get started. We haven't had any reason to be excited about this competition in a long time. In fact, it's just been a constant source of misery as we see Dutch teams doing well in the Europa Conference League and putting our coefficient status down. So yeah, I'm excited for that to get started. But I do agree slightly with what you said about it being a bit of a reality check. There was a lot of positivity around Vitória, but even with the departure of a player like Ricardo Mangas recently, you do kind of look at it and you think there's not that much of a gap, perhaps as you think, between them and the teams below them, in a sense that it only takes losing one key player, or it only takes going on a small kind of downturn in form for them to find themselves kind of back in that pack of fifth to eighth place. And it's going to be a long season, especially with European football. They've done fantastic so far, and the manager's done a great job. Commend them for that. But there's still an awfully, awfully long way to go. So let's see. Quietly optimistic, but like I said, a very long way to go. Well, let's try and talk about some other games. Pick out some other games from the rest of the weekend. I'd like to start with Santa Clara versus Estrela, not least because we had a managerial departure as a result of this game. Santa Clara beat Estrela 1-0 in the Azores. It meant that Estrela failed to register a win for the sixth consecutive game. They're yet to win this season. They only have 2 points in six games, and it was the final nail in the coffin for Felipe Martins. He was relieved of his duties as Estrela manager. Following that, I think it's fair to say that Estrela have underperformed compared to what I think some people expected, and probably myself in that. I think Felipe Martins was seen as a fairly exciting appointment. He had a good reputation after what he achieved with Casapia. And there were some good signings. They have players like Alan Ruiz. They brought in players like Ferro, Nani, just to name a few. Some others coming in as well. But it's been undeniably poor from Estrela. I went to their last game of last season. I thought they looked pretty poor then, if I'm being honest. And they don't seem to have improved much at all. So there is, from my perspective, an element of disappointment, but I don't know whether you agree with that, whether you even had those expectations to begin with, or whether this is perhaps a bit more predictable.
Now, to be honest, I'm quite disappointed because I thought they would do well this season. After the first game against Braga, where they got the point from away, I thought, okay, this is a good base. Then in the last day of the market, they go and pick up Travas from Sporting on loan and Jovan Cabral, which I thought was an amazing scoop for them if he's able to get fit. But the truth is, neither of them is having a great impact. Nani and Alan Ruiz are very good signings, but you play in the middle of the park with two players. Alan Ruiz is not that old, but he's an old 31 years old, know what I mean. and Nani is obviously a super talented player. They cannot last the 90 minutes, so he starts and then comes off around the 65, 70 minutes mark. But I'm quite disappointed because I think they have a good team. I think, obviously, what is spoken is Vasco Seabra to go to Estrela. And kind of my vibe is if he does the same thing as he did at Chitoria last year, he's very positive. I think he's a coach that tries to play good football, win possession, which I think a team like Estrela needs to have. And I think, to be honest, some of the results have been quite unlucky. They only have 2 points, but against Santa Clara was kind of a match game where it could have been a draw. Against Boavista, they drew 2-2, but they had so much of the ball in the second half, they could have easily won their game. And straight ahead, you'd have 4 more points. So you would feel a bit more positive about yourself. But I think, to be fair, from what the news came up today, was the Felipe Martins and the board already, he tried to leave in the summer. So it was kind of already issues going behind the scene from back then. So never a good start when your coach wants to leave before the season starts. But so yeah, I'm quite disappointed with Estrela, but I think they have everything to get back to good form. And I really think they need to try to make Jovan, he needs to be essential in their plans. They need to, obviously, keeping fit is always hard for him, but he's such a good player, especially for a team like Estrela. It's no reason why he cannot be fundamental. Yesterday he played 12 minutes and he has no impact on the game whatsoever. So I think they need a manager that brings him the best because he'll be connected to if they do well or not.
Completely. I mean, I remember when they made that signing, I was very, very surprised in a good way, you know, because he's played at quite a high level his whole career. And so, I was very excited by that. And, you know, as you list off those players, there's clearly a lot of very talented players in the squad. There's a lot of conditions for them to succeed. It's a club with a great fan base as well, you know, with great support and all that kind of stuff. So there are real conditions there for them to succeed if they can get it right. I did believe that Felipe Mods was a good enough manager to do so. Clearly that didn't happen. Like you say, maybe if one or two results go their way and the points total looks a bit better, maybe he stays. But I think when you get into 6 games without a win, then it seems inevitable. And I'm a big Vasco Seabra fan, so if he does come in, and I would hope he can make a difference. It's been a kind of a very different story though for Santa Clara this season, because I think they've really shone in the early days of this season. 4 wins from 6. The 2 games that they lost were against Benfica and Porto, so not really any shame in that. And they've won every game. They've looked impressive. They've looked very confident. They seem to have a number of interesting players, not least Alisson Safira up front, who's finding the back of the net, which is excellent. You know, as I alluded to, it always seems to be one newly promoted team who kind of catches people's attention, and they have a bit of a go at the top end of the table. Maybe this will be Santa Clara's year to try and crack, I don't know, the top six or something like that. We'll see. But, you know, the early signs are pretty good, because albeit they played, for me, they played Estoril at a good time. They got a 4-1 win over Estoril when Estoril were in a very bad place. Perhaps if they played them next weekend, they wouldn't get the same result. But still, you know, they've with the games that they've had ahead of them, they couldn't have done any better, in my opinion. They even got that early goal against Benfica, which was sadly, you know, quickly overturned. But still, it was they've had lots of good moments this season.
Yeah, and obviously, I think it's fun with Santa Clara, and I it's hard sometimes to understand why no more teams do the same thing, especially in Portugal, but you can even see in England in the Prem, which is when you have something that works in one season, even if it's in the Segunda Liga, why sometimes the clubs feel the instinct of changing everything, like they're playing Football Manager, where you get rid of your squad and bring another 15 players and everything will be fine. And Santa Clara did not do that. They kept the same core of players. Obviously, they kept the same manager. and just try to bring a bit experience, but keeping the same base. And that works. That worked with a few years ago when Santa Clara got promoted with, who was the manager? He went to João Henrique, that then went to Guimarães a few years after, where they done a really good first season, and then they go back into swap and changing, and they got relegated, and now they're back in and trying to keep on the same base of players. And I think, to be fair, there's a player in Santa Clara that I really, really like, which is Adrián, the center mid, number six, which is, I think, is a player that can easily go up a level, and I think he can control the game, and even against Trelle, he plays so well, I think. He's like one of my guys now, where I just keep watching him because, yeah, I think he's so fundamental in that team because you can give him the ball, he can control the game, he's strong. So even if the game goes into the physical size, he's able to hold on the ball and play. When he has space to go forward, he can pick a pass. So yeah, but I think they'll be doing fine. I think, yeah, there's no much of a guessing that will be the best team of the promoted teams this season. And in the end, maybe Europe, who knows?
Who knows? I mean, definitely, I know we have a lot of listeners who don't watch tons of games. So if you find yourself at the weekend with nothing to do and you see Santa Clara playing, I think they're definitely at this point an interesting team to watch from outside the big three because they're playing some good football. And as Felipe says, there's some gems there in terms of players who I think are worth keeping an eye on. Let's move on so we can try and squeeze in a couple more games. One really interesting game that I wanted to cover was Rio Ave 2, Estoril 2. This was two teams that I've definitely been eager to keep an eye on this season. Rio Ave, they've been pretty good so far. A couple of wins. Obviously, a lot's been made of their activity this summer, the new ownership, and a large number of players that they've brought in. Estoril themselves have had an interesting summer. A new manager, Scottish manager, Ian Cathro, brought in. So there was a lot of interest around that. Rio Ave's start to the season has been better than Estoril. Estoril, although they lost their first two games of the season, they have been unbeaten in their last four, albeit only one win, but still signs of improvement. In my opinion, Rio Ave, I think we've seen from them some good signs, and obviously, like I said, a lot of signings this summer. They have new financial backing, but I think what we're seeing from them is, at this point, a team with a lot of good players, but perhaps where they still need that time to gel, to bring all the players in, and to start playing cohesively. Because there's good moments, like going 2-0 up in this game, but then, of course, the flip side to that is that they let the lead go and they failed to see out the game. So good signs, some interesting players, but some imperfections as well, I think, at this point in the season.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think Rio Ave is one good goalkeeper. Jonathan's good. I don't want to be too harsh on him. But I think if they had a goalkeeper better than Jonathan, I think they would be fighting for Europe this season. Because I think they have a very good manager, Lynn Bouffray. They have a good support because they always have good attendances at home. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they haven't lost at home since last October, so we're nearly a year now. All their signings, they brought a lot of players together, but a lot of them are really, really good. And some of them know the league, like Clayton up front, our son back in the club, which is obviously coming off from the bench. He'll still score 5 or 6 goals this season. Omar Richardson on the left-hand side is a great player, way too good for the level. Siobhan Uvai is back in the team. He knows, obviously, the squad really well and is very, very good on free kicks. I think him and Amina in the centre mid can be so good. But literally, maybe a centre-back, I think under Lansanch, can miss some moments of concentration. and if they had a better goalkeeper, I think they would be so much better. And then Estoril, they brought a lot of players. I think in the same half, I get very confused by them because I think going 2-0 down away, then being able to bring him back to 2-2. And then when I felt they had a chance to go and actually chase the game and try to get the thirds, I think then decided to drop off and like, okay, we've done the hard bit here. Let's try to keep a 2-2-1. And they got quite lucky by not losing that game with two great saves from Joel. But yeah, I think they just need to be a little bit more brave. So I'm quite curious to see what's going to happen next week because obviously next Friday will be the Estoril Sporting game. and see what's going to be the approach, because they have enough quality to try to keep on the ball and actually go for wins instead of stay with draws. But when you're trying down 4.2, you might do whatever to do. But yeah, another bad take from me since the beginning of the season, to be honest with you, because I said either Strelot or could be the next ones to lose their manager, and well, they both there. So
well, I think you might not be far off. I mean, Esteril is such a very interesting team to follow. I think Ian Cathrow is going to be a fascinating manager to keep an eye on this season. He obviously, for anybody that doesn't know his story, he's worked in Portugal before. And in fact, this game was quite interesting because he obviously went back to the club where he was assistant manager under Nuno Espírito Santo at Real Ave. It's where his kind of journey in Portugal started. He does seem to be a very theoretical manager. You know, he talked a lot about in his time break off from coaching, he was writing books about tactics and all this kind of stuff. And I do wonder whether he will be given enough time to get his ideas into this team and whether the team will be responsive to them. Because yeah, it's been a very up and down start to the season. I think more downs than ups, and they've looked quite lost at times. I mean, it's an unfair perhaps to bring it up again, but that opening game of the season where they lost 4-1 to Santa Clara, and a newly promoted team in Santa Clara, made them look completely clueless. They were lost on that pitch. It's perhaps unfair to bring that up because Ian Cathrow hadn't had much time with the team. He also wasn't allowed on the touchline in that game. So perhaps it's an unfair comparison. But, you know, Estoril, just a team that it does feel like every season people have high hopes of them. They think, you know, oh, they've got exciting young players and this is going to be the year. And they always seem to struggle. And Vasco Seabra did great work with them towards the end of the last season. He did great work to keep them up. They've obviously gone in a different direction now. They've brought in a lot of different players. I personally have my reservations about how successful they can be this season. I mean, Felipe's put his head out and made a few takes already. I do think Estoril will struggle this season. I would like to see it all click, and I would like to see the manager get his ideas into the team, but I just have my reservations about whether at this level, with the quality of players that they have, whether that can be achieved. So we'll see. I've been wrong before. I could be wrong again. And I would, it's the sort of take that I would happily be proved wrong. You know, I would love them to be successful. So we'll see. Should we quickly do one more game before we wrap things up? Because yeah. I did, you know, you mentioned Estoril being one team you thought would lose their manager and Arouca being the other. Well, let's talk about Ferenc Nil Arouca 1.
Someone lost the manager there.
Well, quite exactly. It was the second managerial departure of the weekend, although not for Arouca, but for Ferenc, after they lost their sixth consecutive games. They've lost all six games this season, and manager Jose Mota left the club. I have to say, Felipe, I did not see this form coming from Ferenc at the beginning of the season. I know they lost Mohamed Belloumi, who was a fantastic player for them and you know, a great asset to that club, but I didn't think last season that this was exactly a club full of star players, that if you just took the star players out they would suddenly be much weaker. It looked like a very cohesive team and a well-managed team that were able to get results in a lot of games against their kind of peers, you know, against similar teams of a similar level. That said, this season, obviously the form has unfortunately dropped off a cliff. Things are going extremely badly. They've lost games against Morens, against Real Ave, against Nacional, and this week they lost against Arouca. It does look like they're lining up to Zay Mareca as a replacement. Very briefly in charge of Gil Vicente, but most notable for his time in charge of Tondela, who, you know, a highly rated manager that I would like to see in the league again. But like I said, I don't know whether you agree, but I personally have been pretty shocked by how bad this form has been from Ferenc.
Yeah, they've been really bad. It's very obviously they have 0 points and Strela had 2 points, but with Strela I always felt they were very close to get a good result, which will change that look of the season so far. With Ferenc, no, Ferenc was never close to any of the games, at least the ones I've seen. Even against Arouca, they lose by one, but they never really created that many chances. Arouca, which I think is a team that can still improve so much, still never show really under threat, and they had a lot of players out. So yeah, I was a bit surprised. To be fair, they lost Obviously, they kept Ricardo Velho, which was great for them. But they lost, obviously, as well, like you mentioned, but they lost Bruno Duarte up front, which I think was a striker that gave them like 6-7 goals last season, and he worked quite hard up front, and they're replacing him with Tomane, which is like a cult hero, but it's not, I don't think, the same level. They lost a player that I really like when they first went up a few years ago, and they were still in the squad last season, but it was the captain. It was kind of important. And every time he played, he kept the ball really well, which is Fabrizio Isidoro. So I think they missed quite important pieces, and they were not able to replace them with even close to similar level. I'm not even sure if Dos Emerek will be able to come and do magic things. I think they are really kind of the bad team in Portugal this season, which is a shame. I think will be between them and Boavista, there's quite a big drop off in terms of what everyone else is doing. So we'll see. I hope, obviously, I kind of like a Portuguese league where there's players from every part of the country. So kind of have someone from Algarve. It's fun, and it's cool to go and see. It was fun when it was them and Portimonense. So I hope they stay or Portimonense goes up. But it's kind of hard to see that happening right now. I don't particularly enjoy either the fact that against the big teams, they change their venue. I think it's obviously it's a commercial reason, and they might make a lot of money. But I think it takes a little bit of like the DNA of the club. If you look at every time Sporting Porto or Benfica went to play there last season, the atmosphere was great. You actually had quite a good amount of supporters from Farense, making the atmosphere really hard for the big clubs. And against, obviously, this season was only against Sporting, but it felt like a preseason game more than a competitive football match. And from Morocco, obviously, so far, I'm very, very wrong, because I think they have a lot of space to improve. They lost Cristo, but they still have Jason, which is just a ridiculously good player. I really like, obviously, goalkeeper is really, really good. I think Dante left back can be really, really fun to watch. And yesterday, Teresa, which came last season, but didn't play that much because obviously the front three was so settled in. But I think he's a player obviously come with great pedigree from Libertadores, which was when I first saw him. So I think they'll be quite fun to watch. And so far, they're doing way better than what I thought they would. So fair.
Well, they did. They also had a slow start to the season, I thought, Arouca. And I think it was probably understandable, you know, because that is a team who underwent big changes. You know, I mean, when they lost Daniel Souza, the manager, you know, so much of the team's identity, I think, came through him. And not to say that the player, you know, they didn't have wonderful players in the side, but I think it was a kind of a team in Daniel Souza's image. And when you lose that manager, it's kind of difficult to carry on it. You have to forgive me, I forgot the name of the current manager, but they've obviously gone for young manager again, you know, someone that they hope will bring fresh ideas, and that does take time. I think the thing for Arouca is that they have to trust in the players that they brought in, and they have to trust that the, you know, lightning will strike twice, because they obviously unearthed these great gems in, like you say, obviously Rafa Majica and Cristo, but also Jason, Molay Sylla, all these players that they found at one point and have made great contributions. They'll have to hope that other players will be able to step up and do similar things. And I think Trezor is a good example of that, a player who, you know, obviously he didn't make that much of an impact last season, but he was clearly scouted well, and he could be the next player to step up and fill the shoes of those players that that have left. Obviously, Arouca made fantastic financial benefit from selling those players, but they do lose a lot on the pitch. So they will need other players to step up and make an impact. But, you know, they found those players before. They can find them again. And you do hope that those players are in the squad ready to make an impact. And I can't help but be optimistic about Arouca. I do think that, you know, with the manager, if they stick with him and they kind of keep going, we're already seeing improved performances. I mean, I know my Sunday league team could beat Friends at the moment, but still it's an important win, and you know, it does make the kind of points tally seem a bit better, and it will help build the confidence. And if they can keep that building, then they can. I don't think they'll quite hit the heights that they did last year, but if they can develop some more players and have another season where they play good football and have a good finish to the league, I think.
Because to be fair, a team like Arouca, if you tell them between Mujica and Cristo, they lost more than half of the goals. So if this season they are able to have a easy, like, okay, not so good as last season, but a easy, nice mid-season finish, mid-table finish, it's perfect for them, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. And reinvest the money that they made from those sales into doing what they do best, unearthing hidden gems and building the team. So let's see. Felipe, I think we'll leave it there for this week's podcast. I would like to say once again, a big thank you for coming onto the show. Your long ball football debut, I think all listeners will agree, you made an instant impact. thank you for your insights. And yeah, it's been a pleasure having you.
No worries. Thank you so much. And yeah, anytime.
So, all right. We'll see you hopefully next week.